Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, a new Hall of Honor class has been officially inducted. We'll talk about a star-studded Friday night on the A-State campus. Men's golf with a historic performance in Colorado last week. Tennis with another really good performance. Volleyball was back home. We'll talk about their matches. But we got to start with football. The Red Wolves were home Saturday hosting a really good Texas State team that was off to a 3-1 start. A-State was a 2-touchdown home underdog, according to the experts, so-called experts. And it turned into one of the most exciting games you'll ever see, one of the best finishes in all of college football this season. A-State winning it 31-30.
This game had multiple personalities.
Didn't it?
I mean, the first possession, I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is...
I had the same thought.
And then all of a sudden, for about the next three quarters, just a slobber knocker breaks out. And then, so for the last quarter, decides, well, we did that for a while. Let's just turn it to a shootout.
Yeah, let's go through this because it was just a tale of, you can't say two halves. It was a tale of three quarters and then one unforgettable quarter. Because you're right, Texas State, they actually won the toss and they opted to take the ball. You would think that would fire up the defense a little bit. Now, Texas State did go down, as you said, and they march right down and score a touchdown in less than 2 minutes. And you're thinking, oh, well, this could be a long day. But, man, the defense settled in after that. That was a Texas State offense that was leading the league in scoring. They were averaging over 36 points a game.
Well, it's Texas State offense that everybody thinks is going to get their coach another job. Let's just be honest about it, right? He's going to be he's already, you're seeing his name circulate with all these big openings, and he's had to address that with the media down there, and even said he addressed it with his team. They have a good reason, right? I mean, yeah, he's done a heck of a job. And yeah, and they went down and, as you said, you know, made it look easy, and then the defense just said, we're going to flip the script here.
Yeah, I was really proud of the way the defense locked in because they did a phenomenal job. And it's not like we were doing anything dynamic defensively. We did not have a single tackle for a loss in that game. There were a ton of tackles for no gain, a lot of tackles for 2 yards or less, but no TFLs, and it's not like they had any takeaways either. They just did a good job kind of keeping Texas State behind schedule. Texas State was top 25 in the nation coming in and third down percentage. And the Red Wolves did a good job. They held them well below 50%. And then the offense started to get things going a little bit. And you could tell a big part of the game plan was getting Jalen Rayner involved in the run game. And we saw this a lot against Iowa State. And Jalen had a team high 92 rushing yards. He actually had about 125, but he was sacked 5 times. Yeah. And a lot of those yards got taken away. He had 2 rushing touchdowns, and the first one came late in the first quarter.
2:11 remains opening quarter. A-State with the football trailing at 7-0. Now Rayner will keep it up the middle across the 10. 5. Jalen still on his feet. He's into the end zone. Touchdown, Arkansas State.
Tied it up at 7. And then later in the first half, Clune Van Andel able to knock down a 51-yard field goal that tied his season long. Red Wolves were up 10-7. Texas State ties it up at the half. It stays tied at 10 all the way through three quarters. And as you said, that's when everything changed. Texas State led on 3 different occasions in the fourth quarter. First time they took the lead, they go up 17-10, but then the Red Wolves answer back.
First and goal, Rayner rolls right, throwing for the back of the end zone. This ball is caught by Hunter Summers. Touchdown, Arkansas State!
Ruling on the field is a touchdown.
Rainer sprinting to his right, found Summers in the back corner of the end zone. Summers got a foot down, and the Red Wolves are a point away from tying this game with 6:40 remaining.
Texas State gets it back. They're able to go down and score again, and then the Red Wolves come right back down the field. An 8-play drive finishes with a 5-yard touchdown pass to Kenyon Clay.
Now Clay stands to the left of the quarterback, Jalen Rainer. Rainer rolls right, throws right, caught. Kenyon Clay into the end zone. Touchdown, Arkansas State.
And at this point, there's a minute 20 to go in the game. And you're thinking, oh, just hold on. And
we're headed to overtime.
We're going to overtime. That's not what happened. The final minute 20 was as if the fourth quarter wasn't exciting enough to that point. But then Texas State's quarterback, Brad Jackson, goes on a 63-yard run. And credit Trenton Allen Yao. He's hustling. He's trying to save the touchdown. He's a competitor. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, just
let him score.
Let him score. Well, he made the tackle at the 3.
And right, and listen, no player, I would say no, but I mean, such a small percentage of a player in the heat of a moment at that time is going to be thinking about anything but tackle that guy. Now it's one thing if you get to set it up and have a conversation about whether you're letting them score from down on the goal line, but when a guy's just running down the middle of the field, nobody in that moment's going to think, I ought to just let him score.
Well, that's when our conversation on the broadcast began, and I asked the guys, I said, well, you got to let him score here, right? And, of course, that is the strategy in that situation when it's first and goal from the 3 with a minute 5 to go. Your best chance is to let them score. And at that point, each team had all 3 of their timeouts. Now, Texas State gets set up. They're going to wind the clock down. Butch Jones has to take his first timeout, and I think he takes it with a minute 3. That's when he tells his team, okay, we're going to let them score here, get the ball back, and take our chances. So Lincoln Perry runs it in, makes it 30-24. I'm curious, and I haven't been able to talk really to any of the players about this to this point, but I think what really electrified that sideline more than anything is the missed extra point. Because they hit it off the upright, and you see our sideline go crazy. Well, still, we're down 6 with a minute to go and 2 timeouts. You're thinking, okay, it's possible to go down and score. But now in the back of your mind, you're thinking, not only can we go down and score, we've got time for that, but we can go win.
I agree with what you're saying. I think the mindset, even though you're down 6 in both scenarios, or you're down 6, it's now you're not thinking, we've got to go score to get it to overtime. I feel like we can go score and win this thing is a different mindset than we've got to go score to get it to overtime.
So we get the ball back right at a minute to go, 2 timeouts. Could you draw up a better drive
than that?
I mean, Keith Eckendorf said, hey, there's a soft spot over the middle, and we just kept hitting it for these big gains. And we were down the field in no time. Jabari Bush, by the way, made a great catch. The redshirt freshman tied in, came back to the ball, made a fantastic catch at one point. Kenyon Clay able to get down to the 4-yard line. And we finally called the first of our 2 remaining timeouts.
But every one of those
with 10 seconds left.
Kept thinking, every one of those chunk plays, like, oh, all right, we'll grab a timeout. Nope, we're just going to run up here and get another big chunk. Well, now we'll grab a timeout. Nope, we're just going to go to – and it was just like pop, pop,
well,
pop.
Well, outside of the first pass, which was a 9-yard completion to Hunter Summers, the clock was stopping after the first downs to move the chains, and then it would crank back up again. So you were getting the clock to stop a little bit, but then finally, yeah, you get first and goal at the 4, and Coach Jones takes that timeout. And then why not put it in the hands of Jalen Rainer at the end?
10 seconds to go. First and goal from the 4. Jalen Rainer will fake the handoff, keeps it. Jalen Rainer is in for the score. Jalen Rainer scores with 6 seconds to go. And the Red Wolves are an extra point away from taking the lead.
Of course, Clune Van Andel has to come out and do what Texas State was not able to do, and that's hit the extra point. He's able to do that. You're up 31-30. They had put an extra second back on the clock, so there's 7 seconds to go. And Butch Jones actually talked about it afterwards. He said, I was kind of thinking that, you know, they had their timeouts. I thought they might get closer to midfield, try to throw a pass, and then set up a Hail Mary with 7 seconds left. That's not what they did.
They just went full circus.
Jackson throws this one complete. The lateral to Sparks. He lost the handle, picks it up. Now he laterals it back to Jackson. Throws it across the field to Perry, across the 35-40. Perry across midfield, and he's tackled from behind by Ethan Hassler, and that'll do it. The Red Wolves come back in the final minutes, and they knock off the Bobcats of Texas State in an absolute thriller.
On that final play,
they set it up pretty dang well. I mean, they got what they wanted, which was the ball on one side of the field with a wall set up.
For Lincoln Perry.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh, I mean, he's thinking, this is the Hollywood finish right here. He's the place where my career started. I'm going to walk it off with a crazy touchdown.
He's the kid from Little Giants with the glasses. I'm going to score a touchdown.
Yeah, they had the wall set up, but man, what a job by Ethan Hassler.
Yep.
He came in and brought down Lincoln. The ball actually came loose, and Drew Collins was able to recover it. But I love the celebration.
I'm glad they didn't score, but boy, would that have been that thing was getting reviewed if they did, because to go back and look at there was a time early in that play where it's on the ground and advanced forward. That would have been a pretty fascinating review to watch them unpack if they would have had to have.
Yeah, there was a lot going on there. But then the celebration. It was really cool to see because, look, all this has been building up. Everybody's been frustrated with the 4-game losing streak. To see the guys celebrate the way they did, they go over with the sound of the Natural State Band, and the team stayed on the field for a while. I know it was only game 6, but it kind of looked like a field where we had just won a conference championship, but they needed to celebrate.
Yep.
This is a team that needed something to enjoy after playing 6 straight Saturdays to start the season. You know, they were excited about a couple of days of rest coming up, kind of going into the mini bye week. But talk about a springboard going into the second half of the season. You are able to defeat one of, if not the most talented team in the Sun Belt this year.
And, you know, after stubbing your toe the week before, like you really kind of turned the West Division a little bit upside down. I mean, like right now, it's all bets are off, right? The situation changed after Saturday in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely wide open with what happened on Saturday. Just so many unsung heroes in this game. One guy that certainly deserves to be celebrated is Jalen. He was phenomenal, deservingly so. He was named Sun Belt Conference Offensive Player of the Week. He was named to the Davey O'Brien Great 8 with his performance. You ever see a guy complete 20 consecutive passes to end a game before? He did it.
I don't think so.
He had 4 total touchdowns, 2 through the air, 2 on the ground. I think everybody was in complete shock, including the two of us, when Corey Rucker dropped the deep ball in the 3rd quarter. You never see him drop one like that. But, man, did he bounce back. He had some tough catches in that game. 8 catches for 102. We were down 3 linebackers in that game. Aaron Alexander and the freshman Nigel Nelson started. Then we had Kyle Taylor come in. He was kind of the 3rd guy. And he had a team-high 12 tackles in that game. That was cool to see. And you want to talk about another unsung hero? How about our long snapper, Drew Nicholson? Remember that 57-yard punt that was down at the 1 in the first half? He was the one that fell on top of that. And in your life, you'll never see a bigger hit than what Drew Nicholson put on one of the punts later in the game in the second half. You won't see a long snapper put a bigger hit on a guy. He looked like, and you go back and you watch the replay, he snaps the ball, and by the time it's in Jackson Waller's hands, he's probably 8 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. I mean, you've never seen a snapper so quick off the line of scrimmage. He beat everybody down the field, and he lit up Bo Sparks, the punt returner.
Yeah, and I tweeted out the other day, I thought the unsung hero, too, is whoever's leading those workouts that the band is doing.
Yeah.
Did you see? So
I saw the guy on the video. You're talking about
right.
that.
The guy who goes full on Mr. Olympia from the band when we're doing crowd shots and there's a, you know, there's a flex cam. We just kept coming back to him and he was doing the full bit now, just like you would do it in a competition.
He looked like he had a bowling ball in his bicep, man.
So much, and then even like in the 2 minute timeout. When we're doing the selfie cams and everybody's just on the video board on their phone, the camera went and picked that guy up again just to like, we're not even using the cameras in that timeout.
Yeah.
We said, well, go put it on him anyway. And so we went straight from the selfie cam back to him and he got to get the guns out again. So shout out to that guy.
That was just part of a really, really fun night. And for all those who were there and all those who stayed for the end, I mean, they were treated to one of the most exciting games you'll ever see.
That is true.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea, customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Back on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Oh, what a night it was Friday. Mm. We talked a lot about it leading up to it. One of our favorite events every year, the Letter Winners Hall of Honor Banquet. And it's held there in the Woodard McAllister Club area at Centennial Bank Stadium, and it was neat. It was sold out this year. I think it's the first time we sold it out since the year Applin and DeMario went in.
And that's kind of behind the curtain a little bit. That is a sellout after they went and squeezed in, I think, four more tables than the original layout calls for. And it was still sold out. And they were still having to, unfortunately, the last 24 hours or so before it, have to tell people that there's not a ticket.
Thought the room looked great. Environment in that room was just fantastic. And everywhere you looked, everybody you talked to, I think, had big smiles. It was just a fun atmosphere to be in. A big part of that was the 1975 team. Of course, they had their reunion weekend, and they had their big tent set up on Saturday. And great to see them honored on the field during the game. I know they had a couple of the honorary captains before the game out there for the coin toss.
They have every game so far, and will pretty much continue to be the case. The honorary captains all year long will be guys around from that era.
Just really, really cool. But they had a lot of the members there at the banquet on Friday night.
They sure did. But, I mean, at least maybe even a smidge over. Like, we talked about how good their sign-up was for the weekend, how good, I mean, how much participation they were getting. And I think probably, I'd say just over half those guys were there Friday night because we had the bags for them with their polos and all the stuff we were giving them. And, I mean, half of those bags got picked up Friday night. I'd say over half.
I don't ever remember more letter winners actually at the banquet. There were a ton of them. And one of my favorite things that we do every year at that event is something that Coach Lacewell started years ago where – he suggested everybody stand up that's a letter winner, and just around the room, we kind of go all the way around the room, and we have them stand up, give their name, their sport, and the years they were here, and it seemed like half the room was made up of former letter winners at Arkansas State.
So, yeah, you may have to start making judgment calls on the whether they actually introduced themselves or not. You may have to make the decision. Are we just standing up, or are we really doing this other part? Because there's a lot of them.
I think it's actually pretty cool just having them introduce themselves, but it was cool. One person that was there for the second straight year that I thought was really cool was Coach Kaywood Hill. She came
makes
in
me happy
for the banquet. Of course, kind of the author of women's sports at Arkansas State. She was the first ever head women's basketball coach, first ever volleyball coach, first ever tennis coach. And she was there last year, and she came back again this year.
Yeah, she's actually now on the Letter Winners Club board.
How cool is that?
Yeah, I love it. It makes my heart happy that we were able to kind of go get her reconnected, which she needed to be. I mean, like, she's a, as you said, a pivotal figure in the history of this thing. Basically, the Ike Tomlinson of women's sports.
Really is.
So it's rightfully so that she's back in the fold.
We talked to Kelsey McCray last week on the podcast, and it was great to see him in person. I thought he gave a fantastic speech. My favorite part of it was he talked about that off season between his junior and senior year, and he's talking about running the bleachers at the stadium just on a really hot day in the off season, and how his mind wanted him to just give up. He was hurting that bad, and somehow, after thinking about all the close losses from the year before, it kind of motivated him, and all of a sudden his body went into a gear he didn't know he had, and just went harder than ever, and that kind of helped motivate him going into that 2011 season. And of course, we know the history there and how that sparked that amazing 9-year run for A-State football. But that was a great story. He had a couple of his former teammates sitting at the table with him, Jeremy Gibson and Isaiah Shepherd. And man, we keep seeing Steve Roberts show up at the Hall of Honor banquet, and neither one of us, I know, are upset about that, as he keeps coming back to see his former players inducted.
Yeah, that's probably not subject to change anytime soon. He's going to keep having guys get in there.
And it just is another reminder of what he was able to do during his time at Arkansas State, and bringing, honestly, that kind of talent in here.
Yeah, and I don't know when, but like at some point in time, all those guys are going to get to come for Coach Roberts' induction.
It needs to happen, and it's something that becomes more and more apparent every year with the history there, and you know how he was able to make A-State football respectable for the very first time on the FBS level. So, yeah, great to see Coach Roberts. His wife, Sherry, and daughter, Abby, were there too.
Even his new son-in-law he's got.
His new son-in-law. Rebecca Sargent was inducted from women's golf. Got to meet her for the first time. Her whole family was there. They drove 18 hours from Toronto. I was told right before the banquet that it was their son's 13th birthday. Instead of celebrating with his friends back home in Toronto, he got in the car and drove 18 hours to see his mom inducted into the Hall of Honor. So,
which is also her anniversary.
Went ahead and made the call to sing happy birthday to the kid, and I think he really, really enjoyed it. So that was neat. She made a good speech. Rudy Sims got up after that. She made a short but sweet speech.
She did exactly what I thought she was going to do.
No, I thought she did a good job.
You know, it was funny. I told and Brian Boyer was there, but we were talking last week, and you know, Rudy still, like, I think she's got, I can't remember, maybe 6 more years, I think, of military service left. She serves in the military, and the service she does is 3 years overseas and 3 years stateside. So she just got back stateside after 3 years in Bahrain.
Wow.
So she's not really been back, not a real social media presence. So, like, I haven't seen Rudy. And I told Coach Boyer last week, I said, look, you got other players. I mean, you're Adrian Davies and you're Allie Carters. I mean, you'll follow those. I was about to call them kids. They're not. But follow them on social media. Keep up with them. Know their moms or their wives and all things. You can get, like, I can grasp that these other players I'm watching are grown up. I said, but I can't. I'm having a hard time with the notion that a 40-year-old Rudy Sims is about to come in here. And so she kind of bailed me out, because I walk in and see Rudy up front, and it's like she could have walked straight to the arena, put on number 3, and played. She looked the exact same.
Yeah, she looked great.
I was like, thank you. That's that's what I needed, because now she's still, you know, 22 years old in my book.
No, she looked very much the same as she did when she was playing, and it was fantastic to have her there. It was great to see Coach Boyer there. And then the last person to come up to the podium on Friday night was Dickie Nutt. And, of course, we got to visit on this podcast with Coach Nutt several weeks ago, and you could tell he was really excited about this night, but all of his family was there. So many friends, former players, Chico Fletcher, CJ Pepper, Micah Marsh, John Beck, Freddie Hicks, they were all there for the ceremony. And I don't think we've ever had a better induction speech. We've had a lot of really, really good ones. But you remember real quick just how good that man is in front of a room. And
not a single note.
He was absolutely amazing. And that whole room was cackling for about 20 minutes while he
and
was
the other
up
thing,
there.
It was just like this master class. And like as he's standing at the podium, it's like he just went from his right to his left across the room, effortlessly weaving people in the crowd into his speech.
Yeah.
Like they were key to the whole operation. Just person by person, and what the it's like. It especially for if you've ever done any public speaking, is like this is expert level stuff.
No,
right here,
he is as good as it comes when it comes to that and interacting with the crowd. CJ Pepper got up at one point; he was starting to go to the bathroom, and as soon as he gets out of his chair, Coach Nutt's in the middle of something. He says, "CJ, where are you going? I promise it'll get better.
Yeah, it didn't blink. I mean, it's just, it really was expert level. And a friend of ours, Matt, who we both know, and we know one of these days will be a Hall of Honor inductee of ourselves, told me after the thing, hey, if I'm ever going to this thing, wait about 20 years so they got enough time to forget about Dickie's speech.
Just a wonderful night, though. Great to see all those guys. And, yeah, one of my favorite parts of the night was just seeing Coach Roberts, Coach Nutt, and Coach Boyer together. I mean, you go back 20 years, those were
the pillars.
Really? They were the three guys that were kind of the faces of A-State athletics for not only 1 year, but several years all here together at the same time. So, yeah, that was really, really neat to see, and I think they enjoyed it every bit as much.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. What a week for men's golf. They go into the Colorado Invitational, the Mark Simpson Colorado Invitational. 19 teams in the event, and they win the thing, posting a team score of 42 under par. And a big part of that was our old buddy Thomas Schmidt, former Second to None podcast guest. He put together a historic performance, winning individual honors at the event. He finished 22 under par, which is the second lowest score relative to par in NCAA history. Did you see the list?
I did.
His name is above John Rahm.
John Rahm, yeah. And other guys you're going to know up and down that list, too. Quite an accomplishment. And then Jay Clowes, I believe, you end up holding off the host team by a stroke. And Jake made an eagle on 17, which proved rather large in how that thing played out.
Yeah. So neat to say you had the second lowest score relative to par in NCAA history. And Thomas, I think maybe the next day or a couple of days later, was named Sun Belt Conference Golfer of the Month for the month of September. So that very well deserved.
Well, I saw that Mark Taylor was telling me Thomas is now, I think, 70 under par in his career at Arkansas State. His total score is 70 under par and 34 under par this month or in September.
Gosh. So he's had a great career.
Yeah, he had a heck of a career. And so it was a pretty easy call, I think, with the month he had in three events to make him the golfer of the month.
So he's playing as well as ever. And as we record this, the men's golf team is currently hosting the 30th annual Bubba Barnett Intercollegiate out at Ridgepoint. So hopefully another
birdie fest.
Really, really good result to tell you about coming up next week.
Although they're going to play through some rain, or are playing through some rain. But anyway, that ain't the first time.
Women's golf is currently in action. They're competing at the Maryland Smith Sunflower Invitational in Lawrence, Kansas.
And then next week, they come home to Sage for their home event at Sage Meadows, what they call the Lady Red Wolves Invitational.
Volleyball split their two home matches over the weekend. They took on Southern Miss. They lost the first set Friday, came back to win the next three. So they won that one in four sets, then lost in five on Saturday.
Dropped the championship banner Friday night before first serve. So it's hanging up there in the rafters now at First National Bank Arena.
Very cool. They'll be back in action this weekend. They're in Monroe Friday at 6, then Saturday at 1. They'll
Big
take
weekend.
On the Warhawks.
Next weekend, as you listen to this, that 17th and 18th weekend, they're home against Texas State. Those are going to be big matches.
Yeah, those could be the two best teams in the conference, certainly two of the better teams in the conference this year. Soccer, they lost matches to Texas State and South Alabama this past week. Just having a hard time scoring.
Yeah, I mean, they're still playing great defensively. Just having a hard time getting one in the goal. They've had quite a few injuries that are affecting that.
At Southern Miss, Sunday at 1 for the soccer team. Tennis, they played really well again. They were in Tulsa at the Tulsa Invite. They came home with 13 victories, 9 singles, 4 doubles. They'll be back in action at the ITA Regionals. That'll be the 16th through the 20th in Norman, Oklahoma. Cross country, they were at the Louisville Classic Saturday. Men finishing 6th, the women finishing 15th. They'll be back in action October 17th at an event in College Station. Do want to mention men's basketball. They've got their big preseason event coming up on Thursday. Looking forward to this. They're calling it Hoops and Howls. This is what the old Boots and Ballers was. But yep. It's a very different setup for this event. And I love the idea. Doors open at 5:30 Thursday at First National Bank Arena. The event starts at 6:15, but you know more about the details than I do. But it's a courtside dining experience, and they're actually going to have a scrimmage.
So it's still like some of the stuff you're used to, silent auction going on. There'll be some really cool live auction items, like that part you're used to. But like instead of it just being table up on the concourse, everything's down on the floor. Because the centerpiece of this basketball event is basketball. They're going to scrimmage 2 8-minute halves. You're going to be there to kind of help navigate the folks through that. Chance to kind of meet the players, meet the coaches, hear about them on the fly, and maybe grab an assistant and hear about what they're running or what this guy. So, because obviously there's a lot of new, right? A lot of getting to know still has to happen. So it'd be a great chance.
With me too.
That's right. So
it's my chance to get to know them.
But it's also this. It's probably geared to be a little. Not that in previous years it hadn't been family friendly, but this one really is meant to be. Like there's going to be menu items just for kids. There's going to be this inflatable setup on the other side of the court from the tables that kids can come enjoy. So if you don't have tickets yet, there were a few remaining last I heard. So grab those and get your first look at your basketball team and you can bring the entire family. It'll be a fun night Thursday.
It kind of brings us back to football. They've got a couple of days of rest. They need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you play 6 straight Saturdays to begin the season. You'll take any kind of rest you can. They'll be back in action. This is a mini bye. We kind of called it that earlier because there's 10 days between games. And the next time they'll be in action will be at South Alabama, Tuesday the 14th, a 6:30 kickoff for that one.
Those Tuesdays always have an interesting effect on your schedule because you kind of go 3 weeks and play one time. You can't play the Saturday before or after a Tuesday. So you get this classic bye in a sense where you know you go 2 weeks without a game, but it's like you go 10 days without one and then 11 more till the next one, which is homecoming.
Yeah, and at this point in the season, I mean, this is a banged-up football team. We played with 3 offensive linemen out on Saturday, and we were down to our third-string center, and Butch Jones in all of his years says, I've never played with my third-string center before. And by the way, credit to Gabe Fortson. Came in about midway through the second quarter, went the rest of the way, and did a good job for us.
Don't remember seeing a bad snap. I didn't see that. I mean,
I don't remember it either. Seemed like Jalen played just fine with his third-string center.
He made it through it.
We always appreciate you joining us. We hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and First National Bank.